I'm Matt and I'm an addict. Are we taping this? Oh, good. Hey, Rick, this is for you. Okay. Matt and I'm an addict. And I just want to tell this little story first is that, you know, I had the privilege and honor of sponsoring the guy who's a programming chair, Rick. And he'd done a wonderful, wonderful job picking speakers. But I thought, you know, and I'm here to talk about the sixth tradition, or NA ought not never endorse, finance, or lend the NA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lease money and property and prestige to its primary purpose. Is that I sponsored the programming chair, and I thought, well, this is my best shot to be spiritual speaker. And it just didn't happen. You know what I mean? We do have a wonderful spiritual speaker. I know who it is. And I look forward to hearing her speak. But money, property, and prestige, you know, traditions. So I got out my NA basic, or It Works online. I read the tradition. And there's actually a lot of things. I learned the traditions by breaking the law. I have 15 and a half years clean. And in my area, when I went to my first Narcotics Anonymous meeting, there was only one. And that's important, too, you know, how much the fellowship's grown in the last 15 years. And we didn't even have readings. Or we did have readings. Somehow or another, somebody got a hold of readings, but we didn't have any IPs. We weren't listed with the region or with the world. We were renegade meetings that just somebody started in a Narcotics Anonymous meeting. We had no connection to the fellowship. Somebody got a hold of IPs, and they photocopied them. You know, it's kind of amazing. You know, I go to meetings and there's all kinds of literature on the table, and nobody reads them. But you know, when it didn't exist, I read every IP. And back then we didn't really know what we were doing. And the traditions, you know, it even says in our readings that until you get involved in service, traditions don't mean too much. So, you know, the tradition, and the other thing, too, is there were no halfway houses or anything else that came to our meetings because they didn't exist. In my town, Johnstown, there's 3 halfway houses. You know what I mean? But back when I started coming to Narcotics Anonymous, there weren't any. So there weren't really any institutions or any outside influences on Narcotics Anonymous. The only outside influence was the other fellowship. You know, and the tradition, you know, itself, if you break it down, is NA as such ought never endorse, finance, or lend the NA name. How do you break that down? You know, is what we can't do is we can't affiliate ourselves with other outside. So what I'm trying to tell you is when you have a clean slate, there was no institutions to really do that with. There was no outside. We just started an NA meeting. Somewhere along the line, and this was like in 1997, a group of addicts got together and we formed Laurel Mountain Highlands. And when we did that, I got involved in service at that level, you know, from the get-go. Because there was a group of us that we decided that we wanted to reach out. We needed literature. We needed a helpline. And we wanted to do some things, you know, to help addicts find Narcotics Anonymous, and we wanted to get connected to the rest of the fellowship. And then in 1997 they opened up a halfway house, a woman's halfway house in Johnstown. And now we had the influence of an outside facility. And when that happens, see, the character of the meeting changes. I want to just kind of give you an idea. When I came to Narcotics Anonymous, meetings were really small. You know what I mean? It wasn't unusual. I went to one meeting, and actually this was great for my recovery. There would be 4 or 5 of us around a table. That was how big the meeting was. And everybody knew everybody. Some of us even used with each other, so that's how well we knew each other. And we'd look at all these readings and we'd say, "Adam, we feel like reading all this stuff today. Nah, let's just talk." That's how I got clean. Now, all of a sudden, once we formed an area, once we got a helpline, and once we kind of let the public know Narcotics Anonymous was there, and once we started forming more meetings, what happened was is that the fellowship started to grow. And when the fellowship started to grow, is that, you know, all these tradition problems started coming up. You know, the first time I read this tradition, I thought it was ridiculous. First of all, what addict comes to Narcotics Anonymous with any money, property, or prestige? If you think about it. You know, when I came to Narcotics Anonymous, I didn't have anything. Actually, I was unemployable for a while. You know, I was sick. I was strung out. The desire to use didn't leave me for about 15 months. You know, and I struggled. You know, but what kept me clean was as I got involved. You know, but like I said, as soon as their institutions started showing up and all kinds of people started coming to the program, it became clear that, and getting involved in service, I got to say this too, that my first love is H&I. When we formed an area, we formed an H&I service committee. And what we did was we started taking meetings into prisons. We started taking meetings into to rehab facilities and adolescent facilities. And what happened was, is when this happens, when you start getting involved in service, is what happens is I started dealing with outside facilities. You know, and I'm going to tell you something. In our Narcotics Anonymous, we have workshops. I'm sure there's an H&I workshop here. Is that when you're dealing with a facility other than Narcotics Anonymous, you got to do that in a careful way. You know, so that doesn't appear that, you know, that NA is endorsing this facility or this facility's running NA. Because I'll tell you what happens is a lot of times facilities, I mean, when I was involved in H&I, we had one facility where we went in and we worked on trying to have a commitment there, and they disapproved of who we wanted to send to the commitment. We took it to area service and we said, okay, you know, pretty much this, you know, we're doing this commitment. We've offered to people that we thought that could do the commitment, and now this facility doesn't want these people. You know, and it became clear that, you know, we shouldn't do this commitment. Because what was happening was this facility was actually asking us to break our traditions. And that stuff happens. See, outside facilities, they don't, I mean, it talks about this and it works how and why. NA has a primary purpose, and NA has its own message. And what we can't let happen, and what the Sixth Tradition talks about, is we can't let an outside facility dictate what our message is. And what is the message in Narcotics Anonymous? That any addict can lose the desire to use, you know, lose the obsession and the compulsion to use and find a new way to live. It's a message of hope and a promise of freedom. Now, you got to keep in mind that rehabs and such and prisons and such, you know, they have a different message. You know, and with these different messages, you know, that it might conflict with our message. You know what I mean? So we got to be real careful. You know, I'd like to go into specific examples, but I can't think of any off the top of my head. But I know that there's been times where Tradition 6 is we had to ask ourselves as an area on a service level, and sometimes as a group. You know, a couple of things that I've learned from doing all kinds of service work in Narcotics Anonymous. Number one, Narcotics Anonymous doesn't recognize walls. You know, that when a group comes from a facility to a meeting, and this is something that I only could practice because my shoulders aren't big enough to be a traditions enforcer, is that they're members, if they say so. That's what our third tradition says. You're not a halfway house person. You're a member of Narcotics Anonymous. The neatest thing is that, you know, being participating in prisons where it's almost like, yeah, we're behind bars. We're behind walls. But, you know, for that 1 hour, the walls are irrelevant. You're a member if you say so. You know, I had the privilege of doing some long-term state prison facilities. And you know what? Believe it or not, the inmates ran the meeting. Okay, they got their own secretary. They got their own chairperson. We had a tradition where we were called the outside visitor. We would share last. And they ran the meeting. It was amazing. In prison, ran the meeting like it was a meeting out on the street. And I got to tell you something. Some of them guys were really working a program of recovery. In a long term, well, they say long term. It's long term. They had more clean time than I did. And some of those meetings were better than meetings you could find on the street. You know? So really, it was irrelevant the fact that you're a prisoner. It's irrelevant the fact that you're in a halfway house. It's irrelevant the fact that you're in a rehab. Now, you know, I remember when I was in rehab, and you're in that little van, and they take you, and you've got rehab stamped on your forehead, and you're afraid to share because you thought somebody, you know, you don't know these people, and you're terrified because you got rehab stamped on your head. They all know you got off the van. I remember how that felt. You know, the sixth tradition, you know, when I practice it, is just like saying, you know, that no, you're a member. You got full rights and privileges like any other member. You know? And money, property, and prestige, you know. The other thing is that you can't cater to a facility. You know, you can't, you know, I mean, it works, how Y talks about it, and practical experience shows that, you know, especially like I said, in Johnstown, all of a sudden we have three halfway houses. They have a tendency to attend certain meetings on a continuous, consistent basis. And what happens is it's really hard to practice this tradition. If we were truly an NA meeting, it doesn't matter that you're in a halfway house. But it's very hard because the perceptions and the, oh, that's a halfway house meeting. You know? It's not a halfway house meeting. You know? And the other thing, too, is like this retreat. You know? I mean, sometimes when you show a facility, you know, special privileges, you know, like, you know, if you're in this facility, you can get into this retreat for a cut rate. You know what I mean? Why not all newcomers? Talks about that and it works how and why. So, really, if we're not going to endorse, finance, or lend the NA name to any related outside, you know, facility or enterprise, let's money, property, prestige, divert us from our primary purpose, is we got to know what our primary purpose is. We got to know that, you know, if we're following our traditions up to the point of number six, you know, basically everybody's welcome here. It doesn't matter who you come. Matter of fact, you know, I'm going to just touch on tradition three. You don't even have to be here clean. I don't know how many times I've went, you know, I mean, there's so many examples in my years of recovery where somebody would be nodding off in a meeting and drooling on themselves. There's one girl, I thought she was a death sentence. She'd come in all strung out. She'd sit there, drool on herself, and nod out. You know, she got a couple years clean. You know, so even a using addict, as long as they don't disturb the fellowship, is welcome here. You know, so if we're following our traditions and we're following our primary purpose, you know, and then stuff happens. I wore this for our spiritual retreat shirt. You see what's on there? Some of you may know, some of you may not. This is the AA symbol. I had to buy a shirt that I never seen a shirt in my life. An NA shirt that has an AA symbol on it. Now, this is an example of a sixth tradition violation. You know what? Some people were very upset about this shirt. I thought it was a unique and a collector's item. I snatched mine. You know what I mean? You know, and this was a screw-up. Actually, that they wanted to do is they wanted just to have this. They didn't want to have the bottom here. The printer screwed up. This is the international symbol for camping. The printer actually thought, well, this would be cool just to make a triangle. See with symbolism? See how people could get it twisted? I mean, the poor retreat chair heard an earful at the, you know, the spring retreat, the regional spiritual retreat. He heard an earful about this, and he probably will hear it for many years to come. But, I mean, this is an example. This is a great example of what happens when you violate the seventh tradition. The last thing I'm going to say about traditions is, like I said, personally, the way with traditions is that I can't enforce them. Not as a group can. You know what I mean? But as an individual, the best thing to do is practice them. Because, like I said, violating traditions is how I learned the traditions. Remember, when I got to Narcotics Anonymous, you know, we have a tradition, we'll never be organized. We were not organized. You know, we kind of learned from our predecessors. We kind of learned from people who had some experience. But we had no idea what Narcotics Anonymous was. But we were willing to come and we were willing to learn. You know what I mean? If you get involved in service, you know, stuff will happen. You know, traditions will come up. You know, the thing with like halfway houses and rehab. You know, it doesn't serve our primary purpose not to cooperate with these facilities. I mean, if I ask for a raise of hands of how many people in here got to Narcotics Anonymous through a jail, you know, through a halfway house, through a prison, or through, you know, a rehab, chances are everybody's in here. You know, the other thing, last thing about traditions is that I know, because I learned the program through the basic text and from people who practice the program, is a lot of times, too, is a lot of rehab stuff, you know, lingo and so on and so forth. It comes into the meeting, and it's not necessarily the message of Narcotics Anonymous. You know what I mean? Because sometimes, you know, people just, you know, they want to share what they learned, you know. And I was the same way. I went to rehab. I heard some stuff, you know, and I wanted to contribute to everybody's recovery. And I was contributing stuff. But, you know, until I got the basic text and the sponsor, I really didn't know what the message in Narcotics Anonymous was. You know what I mean? And sometimes, you know, I had to learn from my sponsor. And he would say, well, that's the influence of rehabs. That's the influence of outside stuff. You know, I had to learn that, you know, there's all kinds of wonderful recovery literature. Unless it says, you know, it was written in in committee by Narcotics and all, it's not in any literature. It might be wonderful stuff, you know, but, you know, like Hazleton, probably most of the people in this room know about Hazleton. Hazleton's a multi-million dollar firm. They publish all kinds of literature. It's good stuff. I mean, I'm not knocking it. But guess what? It's not Narcotics Anonymous literature. And if we're following the sixth tradition, it shouldn't be in a meeting. You know? And basically, how do I learn this stuff? I read some wonderful stuff that didn't belong here, and I had an old-timer hand me my head. That's how I learned the tradition. You know? I mean, and the thing was, is that it was done, and this is the last thing I want to say, is that when I did break traditions, people in a loving and kind way would take me, they wouldn't embarrass me, not always, sometimes they did. You know, sometimes it was a public humiliation, but a lot of times it was, is my sponsor would explain to me in a loving, caring way, in private, what I did wrong. And then sometimes, you know, and probably no matter where you come from, there's probably meetings where there's a crusty old timer will tell you in no uncertain terms what you did wrong publicly. I'm here to tell you that, you know, from my experience, I had it handed to me both ways. And what I could appreciate is that, you know, if I do something, you know, that violates your tradition, take me off in the corner. You know, explain to me of a tradition. Show me that it works how and why. Explain to me what I did wrong. You know, don't shame me or embarrass me. You know, I mean, like I said, I don't enforce traditions. My shoulders are not that broad. And I've seen, every time that I've seen that happen, and it doesn't matter which tradition it is, did you ever notice meetings tearing themselves apart where, you know, this group will go off and form another meeting or they just go away because, you know, somebody decided, you know, that they knew more than the rest of them. You know, our first traditions are our common welfare comes first. Personal recovery depends upon any unity. You know, so sometimes, you know, for the good of trying to enforce your tradition or impose a tradition, I've seen meetings actually fall apart and die. So that's the last thing I want to say. It's a pretty dry, dull subject. I'm glad you listened. Everybody looks like they were paying attention. Maybe some of you were daydreaming. That's okay. But that's all I got. Matt and I'm out.
I'm Beth, and I'm an addict. 12/27/07 is my clean date. I'm really nervous because I don't do topics well, and So I've been fretting about this for a little bit. I just finished my sixth step probably about 5 months ago, something like that, and I procrastinated on it for quite a while. It took me about a year to do my sixth step, and that's procrastination, one of my defects. So a lot of us talk about the fourth step like it was like this big traumatic issue, and I didn't have a problem doing my fourth step. My fourth step was like nothing. It was just a bunch of laziness that I put it off. You know, just putting pen to paper for my fourth step was like not a real, you know, that was my biggest deal. It was just laziness, not really wanting to do the work to do my fourth step. And when I came to my sixth step, it became about getting humble, you know, and becoming entirely ready to have God remove all the defects of character. That was like scary for me because I had to take a long, hard look at myself. It was like taking my outsides and flopping them all out on the table and spreading them all out and then getting another table and another table and another table because there was a whole bunch of them to take a look at. And putting them all out there. And nobody likes to really take a look at themselves, you know. And it was hard. The sixth step was real hard for me, you know. It turned me inside out. It was a lot harder to do than my fourth step, let me tell you. At least for me. And, you know, so when, like, they talk about all that drama as a fourth step, it really wasn't too much drama for me. Step six was. It was hard. And, like, in the beginning when I came in, when everybody would be talking about defects of character, and I was probably one of those that was like, huh? You know, I don't have many of those. And, but I had to get humble and get a big dose of humility real quick. And take a look at a lot of things in my life. Like, I'm a control freak. You know, for those of you that know me, I know that's shocking, but I had to look at that, and I still have to look at it every day. It's a work in progress, you know. Step six, that's what it is for me, too. It's a work in progress every day, you know, because just doing step six and completing it doesn't make it magically disappear, either, and you know, I'm ready to have it removed, but it doesn't make it go away. I recognize them, and it's painful. It's painful taking a look at that. My control issues cause me a lot of chaos in my life. I get them honestly, and, you know, I come from a hard-headed old Italian father that taught me well. Because I like things my way, and that's what I'm used to getting, and that's what I force my way to, you know. I force it a lot, you know. My control issues they take over a lot, and especially in situations like this, like when we get away to retreat, it comes out everywhere, and my we can attest to those things, too, and I have to, when I'm wrong, I have to go and I have to make a lot of apologies for that and say I'm sorry a few times. And a lot of my defects, they're my comfort zones. So, you know, it's hard to just want to give those up because they're my comfort zones. Like, take my anger issues, for instance. You know, anger to me was like my drug. That was my go-to. My anger was like my go-to thing. It was my easiest emotion to display. And it was always my zone, like my comfort zone. And it was where I went to, you know. And when I didn't have my drugs anymore, it was still my easiest emotion to display. But I had to take a look at that, too. When I got clean, I had to, you know, couldn't act like that anymore. I just couldn't go put my hands on people. I couldn't smash things. I couldn't flip out. And I had to take a look at how I was acting all that time, and that goes along with, you know, control stuff. I couldn't just make people act the way I wanted to. Imagine that, because I, you know, I had a whole bunch of powerlessness. And so I was definitely, you know, I hang on to those things. And a few weeks ago when I was on vacation, well, it was actually in July, I had, like, this anger relapse, and that's what I like to call it. And it was like this comfort zone for me, and I went back to it, and because somebody was in my personal space screaming and swearing at me in my face, and I had this issue, and I snapped out, and I made this rash decision, and I call it my Hulk monster, because when I have my anger, I can feel it, and it comes out of me, and it comes up, and I can feel it rising. And normally I have this A, B, and C, and D thing I do for my anger management now, because through working some steps, I can learn to let that go. But because anger is a major defect of mine, I had this anger relapse, and it was like using for me. And I felt like I needed to go get a white key tag, because anger is my comfort zone. So, of course, I have to pray for that to, you know, be removed. And even when I go and tell the story, like, if I would sit here and tell you guys this story in detail, you could watch my face and watch me tell this story, and it would be like I was using again. Like, you could see me almost getting high off the emotion. So I have to be real careful when I indulge in them, because certain defects are very dangerous for me, very, very dangerous for me to indulge in, because it's almost like using. And so I have to really, you know, get ready and get humble and pray for the removal of these defects every day and be diligent with it, because they're dangerous. Some of these things are so dangerous for me. You know, like my control issues. My higher power's got me. I have to give things over to God, you know. I just went through, you know, this hearing that I went to on Monday, and I wanted to take control over it. Well, guess what? Beth doesn't have control today. And that was a hard thing for me to swallow. And I had to pray about it and pray about it and pray about it. And guess what? Things turned out all right, you know. I have this thing that my friends like to call my 0 to 60. That's what they named it, because that's what we do when we're, you know, working some steps. Our we helps us a lot, you know. And if we can't see our defects coming out, they'll help you in a minute, let me tell you. Because there are certain friends of mine that will look. When I was coming up on this step, they labeled them for me real quick. I'm like, I don't know what defects I have. Well, they gave me a list before I could blink an eye, you know. and so they'll help you out if you ask for it. So, but the 0 to 60 thing, it like, I was ready. I took that hearing to, you know, it was a disability hearing, but I took that hearing to, I'm not going to get it. I've been through this for 2 years. Nobody's going to listen. Wah, wah, wah. And guess what? It went, you know, it went okay, and it went well, because I would just, after I freaked out, I would calm down, I would pray, I would turn it over, and it went okay, because I keep doing the right things. They come out, I calm down, I pray about it, I turn it over, and usually things will be all right. No matter what, my higher power has got me, who I choose to call God. And, you know, this, like I said, this step 6 is a work in progress for me. And it's a painful work in progress sometimes. But it's also a really great work in progress, because to realize I'm not perfect is very humbling. Very, very humbling, but it's okay. You know, I used to hide a lot of my defects, and just like, I have this ability too to get everybody to talk about themselves and not like dig deep with me, and get everybody to talk about what was going on with them. Because I had a job where I was in the helping profession for a long time. I was a counselor. So of course I would take that to extremes too, and like, get everybody to, you know, well, what's going on with you? And I would talk about, you know, everybody else, but what was truly the root of me and what was going on with me. So I have to be real careful with those things, too. But when you're working some steps, you have to get to the root of you. And I have to, and so with step six, I had to dig deep inside me and take a look, not what was going on and wrong with everybody else, but what was wrong with Beth today. And what Beth needed to work on fixing today. And somebody said to me, I haven't done any changing since I came to Narcotics Anonymous. And I said, what? And I know truly that that person really didn't know me, because I know that I have done so much changing. I know that I'm doing some footwork today, and so much changing has taken place in my life. So much changes. And so it doesn't matter what somebody says to me. I know that I've really made a lot of changes in my life that for the better. You know, I'm not perfect, and I'm not working a perfect program and at all. But I know that I'm doing the best that I possibly can. And if not, I'll ask people for some help. Asking for help is an issue I have. I don't like to ask for help, but I have to sometimes today. And it amazes me, because guess what? If you ask somebody for help in Narcotics Anonymous, you usually get it. And, you know, and it's a blessing to be a part of this. And you learn so much from this program that it's beautiful. This program's just so amazing, and how it has bettered my life. It took me 38 years to grow up. I'm 41, and I have 2 years and 8 months clean by the grace of God in this program. And it has taken me so long to grow up. So long to grow up. Like, if things don't go my way, I usually want to just, like, run and call my parents or call somebody, because I want what I want when I want it. And today I usually try and stop myself and work the problem out and try and stay in the solution today. My sponsor always tries to stress that to me. Okay, well, this is the problem. What's the solution? And I try and stay in the solution today. Funny story, like 2 weeks ago, my boyfriend asked me to trim the hedges, and he brought out these clippers that were like Edward Scissorhands clippers. They were like non-electric things that, like, you had to go like this with, and I'm like, what are these? And he's like, they're hedge clippers. I'm like, you don't think I'm doing that, do you? And he's like, yeah. I'm like, you know, Ben Franklin created electricity, you know. And so anyway, I'm throwing this, like, big wah-wah baby fit, and I was going back to old behaviors, because I wasn't going to go do all this hard work. I wanted what I wanted. I went on the internet. I'm looking up electric hedge trimmers. I didn't have any money, so I picked up the phone and I was going to call my dad. And I lived 30 miles away from my parents, and I was going to call my dad to bring me to go to the store to buy me a pair of hedge clippers, to bring them to me out in the country where I live, so I could trim these hedges and show my boyfriend that I could get what I wanted like that, and that it didn't take some hard work to get these hedges trimmed. Well, guess what? If you want anything, you have to use a little hard work today. That's the moral of the story, you know? I realized what I was doing, stopped myself, and said, at least go and try and do some hard work. I have, you know, a little bit of physical disabilities, and that's why I was throwing the fit. But I didn't even make the effort to try to do it. I just went from the 0 to 60. I wanted the answer. I wanted what I wanted right then. I was making the call to my parents. I'm 41 years old, and I was calling Daddy. Wah! But I stopped myself, went out, and just did the best possible job I could with what I had, and did that. 3 years ago, before I entered this program, I would not have done that. It would have been, I wanted what I wanted. I would have threw a fit on the ground, kicking and screaming like the big baby that I was acting like. And I would have got what I wanted. Well, today I didn't act like that, because I've worked some steps in my life today, and because, you know, step six brought me some awareness of this. And these defects are, I'm aware of these things today, and I'm praying for God to remove these things, and bit by bit they're going. And they might come back tomorrow, but I have to be diligent in those prayers to keep that away. And guess what? I went out and did the best possible job I could with those hedges. And I will continue to do just the best possible job I can. You know, a friend of mine pushes me every day. I just recently reached my 75-pound mark. I lost 75 pounds since February 1st because of a friend of my life that constantly pushes me to do the best possible job I can, because one of my defects is gluttony and lust for food. Some people have lust for sexual desires, money, property, prestige, whatever. I have that for food issues because I had the substitution things. And I'm like, well, I can't work out and I can't do these things because I have all these physical issues. And he pushes me and helps me out and gives me the motivation to continue. And I've accomplished so much because of the help of my friends in Narcotics Anonymous and because of working these steps in my life. And it just amazes me every day, every day. And because I'm aware of these defects, I can work on them today. And I have worked on so much. And last week I reached that 75-pound mark, and I'm a walking miracle because of it. And I have chronic pain, and my chronic pain is easing because of it, and I wouldn't be able to do it without this program and without the friends in my life and without you, all you guys. And it's just such a blessing to be a part of all this, and step six brings all that out, and it will continue to as I continue to work on that, and I'm just so amazed. And thank you all for listening. And thank you.